Welcome friends to Literature Mantra. I'm Harsh Singh and in this audio we will discuss various theories on equivalence in translation studies. Before beginning our discussion on various theoreticians and scholars that have proposed theories of or various theories of equivalence, let's recall what Roman Jacobson says about equivalence. Now Roman Jacobson starts by pointing out three types of translation. One is intralingual, the other is interlingual, and the third is intersemiotic translation. After that, he talks about equivalence in the process of translation. Now, after talking about the three types of translations, Jacobson goes on to examine key issues in interlingual translation. And notably, there are two things that he examines. One is linguistic meaning and the other is equivalence. Now, initially, Jacobson starts with the theory of language as proposed by Ferdinand de Saussure, especially Saussure's notion of langua and parole. And Jacobson agrees with the Saussurean notion that the sign is arbitrary, the arbitrariness of a sign. After that, Jacobson also stresses that it is possible to understand what is signified by a word even if we have never seen or experienced that concept or thing in real life. And he gives examples like nectar, jaise ki Hindi mein kehte hain that amrit mila, but nobody in the world has ever drank amrit or nectar or ambrosia. English mein kehte hain ambrosia and nectar. These things are such that nobody in the world has ever drank, right? But still we have some idea of what it may be or what it can be. So this is what Jacobson says, that it is possible to understand what is signified by a word even if we have never seen or experienced the concept or thing in real life. And after this, Jacobson moves on to consider the problem or the issue of equivalence in meaning between words in different languages. And he points out that there is ordinarily no full equivalence between code units, okay? Ordinarily, no full equivalence between code units. So, and he gives the example of English cheese, okay? Cheese jo hota hai, khane wala. And Russian sir. Sir is basically a type of cheese in Russia. The spelling is S-Y-R, okay? S-Y-R. And Jacobson says that both of these things, Russian sir and English cheese, are not equivalent. They are not the same thing. So suppose you have to translate cheese, or let's say from English to Russian, the word cheese. How will you do it? It is not possible to translate it with the word sir, S-Y-R. Or let's consider another scenario, that you have to translate from Russian to English. You have to translate sir into its English equivalent. But in English, there is no equivalent of sir, because sir is not made in that way. Cheese is made in a different way, different to sir, S-Y-R. So Jacobson says that on the level of interlingual translation, there is ordinarily no full equivalence between these two words. But he also acknowledges that it does not mean that two languages which are different cannot be translated. Of course, exact translation is not possible, but a kind of equivalent translation is possible. And for Jacobson, only poetry with its unity of form and sense, and where phonemic similarity is sensed as semantic relationship, is considered to be untranslatable. And it requires creative transposition. Okay, this is the opinion of Roman Jacobson. So as a quick recap, Roman Jacobson says that when we are doing interlingual translation, then there is likely to be linguistic and cultural differences. Yet, translation is always possible between source language and target language. And in the process of translation, even Jacobson recognizes the role of the translator. Because no matter how objective a translation is, the translator's subjectivity always comes in the picture. Now, after Roman Jacobson, let's move on to Jean-Paul Vinet and Jean Derbelnet. Now, both of these theoreticians are French and they are famous for their work called Comparative Stylistics of French and English, a Methodology for Translation. Okay? This was published in 1958. Okay? Comparative Stylistics of French and English, a Methodology for Translation. And this was originally in French and the purpose was, as the name indicates, it was for the study of comparative stylistics and training of translators. Now, in this famous work, Vinet and Derbelnet say that equivalence-oriented translation is an operation that replicates the same situation as in the original whilst using completely different wording. Okay? That it replicates the same situation as in the original whilst using completely different wording. And they talk about two different categories of translation. One, direct. The other is oblique. Okay? Direct and oblique. And direct translation is sometimes also called literal translation. So, Vinay and Durbulnet say that because of structural or metalinguistic differences, certain stylistic effects cannot be transposed into the target language without upsetting the syntactic order or even the lexies. And in this case, it is understood that more complex methods have been used, which at first may look unusual, but which nevertheless can permit translators a strict control over the reliability of their work. And these procedures are called oblique translation methods. And in total, they list 7 procedures. 3 of them relate to direct translation or literal translation, and the remaining relate to oblique translation. The first is called borrowing, the second is called calque, and the third is called literal translation. And all of these relate to direct translation method. In borrowing, what happens? Source language word is transferred directly to the target language. In calque, what happens? Calque is basically a special kind of borrowing where source language expression or structure is transferred in a literal translation. After that comes literal translation. Literal translation is word for word translation, and this is the most common between languages of the same family and culture. Okay, now after that comes oblique translation. And they say that oblique translation method must be practiced when direct translation method cannot be applied. So the first procedure for oblique translation is transposition. Okay, transposition. Transposition basically means change of one part of speech for another without changing the sense. Okay, this is what transposition is. After that comes modulation. Now, modulation is change of the semantics and point of view of the source language. Okay, this is what modulation is. Change of semantics and point of view of source language. After that comes equivalence. Equivalence basically here means change of the same situation by using different stylistic or structural means, particularly useful in translating idioms and proverbs. And the last one is, or the fourth one is, adaptation. And adaptation basically means changing of cultural reference when a particular situation in the source culture does not exist in the target culture. Okay, so when there is no equivalence in the target culture for something which we find in the source culture. And as I said at the beginning, that all of this is from the famous work which they have written called Comparative Stylistics of French and English, a methodology for translation. So what they say is that if any translator uses these procedures which they have listed, it will maintain the stylistic impact of the source language text in the target language text. Okay, the translation. Matlab jab translation karenge tab the stylistic impact will be retained. Now after that, let's talk about the contribution of Eugenie Nida. The spelling is E-U-G-E-N-E. Okay, Eugenie Nida. And he is specially famous in the work of translation of the Bible. In that area, he is very famous. And he has written 2 major works. First is called Towards a Science of Translating. Okay, Towards a Science of Translating. And the other work is called The Theory and Practice of Translation. Okay, The Theory and Practice of Translation, which he co-authored with Charles Russell Tabor. Okay, Charles Russell Tabor. These are the 2 authors. And in the first book, which is Towards a Science of Translating, Nida attempts to move Bible translation into a more scientific era by incorporating recent work in the field of linguistics. And his more systematic approach borrows the theoretical concepts and terminology both from semantics and pragmatics and from Noam Chomsky's work on syntactic structure, which ultimately formed the theory of a universal generative transformational grammar. Okay, sunai hoga aapne Noam Chomsky's work on generative transformational grammar. So Chomsky's work has influenced Eugenie Nida's approach towards translation a lot. And Nida talks about 2 different kinds of equivalence theories. First is formal equivalence. The second is dynamic equivalence. Okay, this is why Eugenie Nida is very famous. Okay, formal equivalence and dynamic equivalence. Now, let me point out that Eugenie Nida drew on extensive field work that showed that the religious message while translation of the Bible is carried out, is often failed to be communicated because different cultural contexts and worldviews exist in different cultures. Thus, Nida came to understand that meaning cannot be divorced from the personal experience and the conceptual framework of the person who is receiving the message or the translated message. And he concluded that ideas must be modified to fit with the conceptual map of experience of different context. So NIDA's purpose as a religious Protestant Bible translator is to affect the appropriate response, one which will start a dialogue not between the receiver and a text or symbols, but between the receiver and God. And according to him, there can be two types of equivalence, namely formal equivalence and dynamic equivalence. And his entire attention is on the message itself in both form and content. Now, formal equivalence supposes that a target language item represents the literal equivalent of a source language item. Whereas, dynamic equivalence is a translation principle according to which a translator seeks to translate the meaning of the original in such a way that the target language wording will trigger the same effect or impact on the target language audience as the original wording did upon the source text audience. So, in dynamic equivalence, the emphasis is on effect or impact that a translation creates. Now, after that, dynamic equivalence is based upon the principle of equivalent effect. And here the source language and the target language texts are not compared for correspondence, and the translator is under no obligation to reproduce the cultural underpinnings of the original. What the translator tries to do is to reproduce the text such as the target language reader can relate to it in a different cultural context. So, this gives considerable freedom to the translator as he or she is given a wider range, let's say a greater amount of freedom. Now, after that, let's move on to J.C. Catford. Now, Catford's main contribution in the field of translation studies lies in the introduction of his idea of types and shifts. Okay, shifts and types of translation. And according to Catford, shifts refer to the changes that take place during the translation process. And Catford also categorizes in his book, which is titled A Linguistic Theory of Translation, an Essay in Applied Linguistics. Okay, this book was published in 1965. So in this book, he categorizes the nature of translation equivalence in broad types in terms of the extent, levels, and ranks of translation. Firstly, full translation is contrasted with partial translation in terms of extent of translation. And Catford defines that in a full translation, the entire text is submitted to the translation process. That is, every part of the source language text is replaced by the target language text material. And in a partial translation, some part or parts of the source language text are left untranslated. So they are simply transferred to or incorporated in the target language text. After that, after partial translation comes total translation. And total translation is contrasted with restricted translation in terms of levels of language involved in translation. And by total translation, he means what is most usually meant by translation. That is, translation in which all levels of the source language text are replaced by the target language material. And by restricted translation, he means replacement of source language textual material by equivalent target language textual material at only one level. That is, translation performed only at the phonological or at the graphological level, or at only one of the two levels of grammar and lexis. After that, rank bound translation. Now, this is contrasted with unbounded translation in terms of grammatical or phonological rank at which equivalence is established. And in rank bound translation, an attempt is made always to select target language equivalents at the same rank. A free translation is always unbounded, equivalences shunt up and down the rank scale, but tend to be at the higher ranks, sometimes between larger units than the sentence. Now, after that, he defines the notion of shifts, because remember, I said at the beginning that Catford introduces the idea of types and shifts of translation. And Catford defines the notion of shifts as departures from formal correspondence when translating from the source language to target language. And he categorizes between two types of shifts. First, he says level shifts. The other he calls category shifts. Now, level shift is when source language item at one linguistic level, for example, grammar, has the target language equivalent at a different level. For instance, lexis. L-E-X-I-S. Okay, lexis. Now, after that, category shifts. Category shifts are further subdivided into four categories. One he calls structure shifts, the other unit shifts, third class shifts, and fourth intra-system shifts. See, from an exam point of view, you don't have to get confused in the various subdivisions which these writers make. Just remember the name of the book that they have written. After that, what is their contribution to the field of translation studies. So, J.C. Catford contributes by proposing the idea of types and shifts. And from an exam point of view, this is what is relevant. Now, after that, Anton Popovic. Now, Anton Popovic describes in his Dictionary for the Analysis of Literary Translation, which was published in 1976. He says that equivalence in translation is the correspondence of the means of expression between the original and the translation. Okay, correspondence, which is the point of intersection of the paradigmatic and the syntagmatic equivalence. And he distinguishes translational equivalence into four types of equivalence. First, he calls linguistic equivalence. Second, paradigmatic equivalence. Third, stylistic equivalence. And fourth, textual equivalence. Now, what does he mean by linguistic equivalence? Equivalence at the linguistic level or word for word translation. After that, what does he mean by paradigmatic equivalence? Equivalence of elements of grammar. Third, stylistic equivalence. Ye kya hota hai? Translational equivalence or the functional equivalence of elements in the original and in the translation. Fourth is textual equivalence. What is this? Equivalence in form or shape. This is what textual equivalence is. Okay. So, from an exam point of view, just remember these four different types of equivalences that Anton Popovic proposes. Now, after this, let's move on to Werner Kohler. Now, Werner Kohler is a German scholar in the field of translation studies, and he proposes five different equivalence frameworks. First, he calls denotative equivalence, then connotative equivalence, third, text normative equivalence, fourth, pragmatic equivalence, and fifth, formal aesthetic equivalence. Now, let's move on to Peter Newmark. Okay, Peter Newmark, he's famous for giving the idea of semantic translation and communicative translation. So, what is the difference between semantic and communicative translation? In semantic translation, Newmark says that there is focus on meaning, whereas in communicative translation, the focus is on effect, meaning and effect. So, in other words, semantic translation looks back at the source text and tries to retain its characteristics as much as possible. Whereas communicative translation looks towards the need of the target audience. And Peter Newmark distinguishes between the semantic and communicative translation in his famous book called Approaches to Translation, okay, which was published in 1981. Okay, Approaches to Translation. And in 1988, there is another book by him, A Textbook of Translation. Okay, A Textbook of Translation. These two books are important. After that, let's move on to Julian House. Now, Julian House, in her book, which is titled Translation Quality Assessment, A Model Revisited. Okay, Translation Quality Assessment, A Model Revisited. She distinguishes between two different type of translations. One she calls overt translation. The second she calls covert translation. Okay, so overt and covert translation. Now, after that, let's move on to Anthony Pym. Now, in his book, Exploring Translation Theories, which came out in 2010, he distinguishes between natural equivalence and directional equivalence. Now, Anthony Pym analyzed existing theories and he defined two types of equivalence and also described how the rise of computer-assisted translation or tools that are associated with computer-assisted translation has given rise to a new twist to these types. And he talks about natural equivalence and directional equivalence. So what is natural equivalence? Now, natural equivalence is where the focus is on identifying naturally occurring terms or stretches of language in the source language and target language. Translation glossaries and term bases, for example, routinely seek to plot natural equivalents in the relevant languages. After that, directional equivalence. This is where the focus is on analyzing and rendering the source text meaning in an equivalent form in the target text. Translation memories, working on a corpus of already translated material, these things impose existing directional equivalents on the translator through the flagging up of exact and fuzzy matches with stretches of language in the database. So, from an exam point of view, just remember that Anthony Pym proposes two types of equivalences. One, natural equivalence, and the other is directional equivalence. And in short, natural equivalence is where the focus is on identifying naturally occurring terms or stretches of language in the source language and target language. The second one, directional equivalence, is when the focus is on analyzing and rendering the source text meaning in an equivalent form in the target text. So, from an exam point of view, Just remember the names of these important theoreticians and scholars, the name of their works in which they have proposed their ideas. And second, each scholar or theoretician has some ideas on types of equivalences. So you should just remember the name or the type of these equivalences proposed by different theoreticians.